Very pleased to welcome to the show right now a great friend and one of the greatest football journalists you will find on this planet, John Clayton of ESPN. John, welcome to the show.
Vic, it's good to be with you again.
All right. So, John, lots of news yesterday out of Jacksonville. An amazing day where you had just a franchise getting sold and a coach being fired. Let's start with the selling of the Jaguars franchise and what that means to that team's future.
Well, I mean, first off, I think it gives some security with the amount of money that the new owner has that they're going to be staying in Jacksonville. And, of course, naturally, if you're a Jacksonville Jaguars season ticket holder and fan, you've got to worry, but also to understand where the direction of the team is, and the direction is not heading to Los Angeles. And the reason I say that is that, first off, you have to have a buzz to your team if you're going to be the L.A. team. I mean, and you look at the way that Gene Smith is doing a good job putting that team together, there's not going to be any buzz. I mean, he's trying to find good, no-nonsense football players to kind of fit the profile of that team. But also, too, that's not going to be attractive enough. I mean, if they're going to be options for L.A., they're going to be at the back of the list because of the way the team is being built. I mean, it may be built to win, but there's no sizzle there. And you have to have sizzle if you're going to be L.A. So I think in a lot of ways, it's smart that they went with Gene Smith for three more years because he's a good personnel evaluator, and I think he's drafted well. But also, too, I think it secures the fact that they're not going to be the L.A. team.
What about the new owner, John? What do you know about him? What will he bring to the league besides all that huge amount of cash that allowed him to buy the team?
Well, I mean, the big thing, I think that, he was so involved with the St. Louis situation that you get the idea that he did well enough that he was going to get the next available team. And, they wanted to have Orthwine because I think that they know he has been he's a rich billionaire that has experience on other sports franchises. So they wanted to have him as the St. Louis owner. And so now they get the next move, which is giving him Jacksonville. And, of course, I say that they're not going to be an L.A. team. What I wonder about long term, could that be the London team?
Right.
Because I think with his resources, that could be a possibility. But for London, you're talking 10, 15 years down the line.
Sure.
But I think what he does, he gives them at least enough money to try to be a little bit more aggressive in some things. Now, they were aggressive in free agency this past year. They're not going to be a big spending team. Still long term, what he has to figure out with an $800 million price tag is that how do you do all the financing and make it work? Because the market in Jacksonville is not that big, but at least he has enough resources to try to make this all work.
Yeah, and what a great success story. Pakistani-born businessman Saeed Khan coming into a league where and it's the sort of thing where you love these success stories because he comes here, builds a business, puts himself in a position to basically do a cash deal for this team, goes through the very extensive vetting process. I know for a lot of people it's a name that even in and around Jacksonville, of course, they're scratching their heads. They're not sure where this all came from, except that the NFL, as I understand it, when they put you through a vetting process as an owner, it's a very thorough one.
Well, no, and the question, I think, is the fact that you can see where the timetable is. I mean, I'm just stunned. I mean, how many times have you seen this quick of a closing? Because they're talking about approving it at the owners' meeting within 2 weeks and then having a closing on January 4th. And so you can get the sense that he was pre-approved for the St. Louis deal until Orthwine decided, you know what, I have first right of refusal and I want to exercise it, and let me slide past the ownership rules of other sports teams in other cities to be able to do it. And they say, okay, fine, we'll make an exception. And they say, okay, Mr. Khan, just stay cool here. We'll get you the next team. And it's like they get him Jacksonville, so you get they feel good about him.
Well, and you and I go into this journalism thing, and meanwhile, he's making billions in the auto parts industry. Why didn't we get into auto parts, John, many years ago?
Let's put it this way. I mean, we both came up in steel-type towns in the East.
Yes.
And all that different stuff. I mean, we realize it's much easier doing this. We're not listing anything. We're not, like, getting our hands dirty. I mean,
good
it's
point.
Like the one thing is, we talk, we write, and we watch. It's,
okay.
That's what we're supposed to do.
I'm sold. That's better than being a billionaire. I like that. Hey, coaching changes, and of course, Jack Del Rio out in Jacksonville. Let's touch upon that and what you sort of see coming there. The beginning of the end, at least short term, that I saw after the Jaguars lost to the Browns, and then some comments that he made afterward that basically pointed a finger at Dirk Cutter, his offensive coordinator, for the questionable play calling down by the goal line.
Oh, yeah. It's like, in fact, naturally, when I heard the news that that it was a firing of Jack DeRio. First thing I had to do was call Vito Stellino, and of course he was even telling me that the reporters there just marveled in Cleveland at Del Rio just selling out anybody. But that's kind of the way he has been throughout most of his career. I mean, he's going to make other people accountable, not necessarily him. And, you know, obviously he's going to take the ultimate accountability for his 9 years down there. But, yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, well, that's Dirk. I mean, that's Dirk made that call. I didn't do it. It's like, okay, fine. But that's why, you know, you don't see a lot of sympathy right now for Jack Del Rio, who really, I think, is a good coach.
Yes.
But they needed to go a different direction. And I think also you can see that, we know that the ownership thing was working behind the scenes, and they somehow, some way, have two national games coming up in the next 3 or 4 weeks. And because of that, I don't think they, at this stage, wanted to have him as the face of the new franchise.
Right.
So what they also wanted to do is, okay, we've got Mel Tucker here. Let's see if he can be a candidate for the job. They give him 5 games to be able to do this. This gives them the opportunity now to call the Jeff Fishers, the John Grudens, see if they have a chance at any of these guys, because they're going to have to be more creative than the other teams looking for coaches, because it's going to be toward the back of the list of destinations for hot coaches. They have to see where the next group of hot coaches really are, and so you put all that together. They needed to get the 5-week start, and that's why they think the timing worked out perfectly for them.
Yeah, and no question about it. And Jack Del Rio, like you said, also a really good guy. I had an opportunity in talking with him when they were in Cleveland, the Jaguars, to just mention to him a colleague and great friend of ours, Alan Wilson, who covers the Buffalo Bills for the Buffalo News, fighting a tough battle with cancer. Jack Del Rio, during the preseason when the Jaguars were visiting Buffalo, makes a visit to the hospital bed of our colleague and great friend Alan Wilson. Just does it quietly, randomly, wanted no publicity for it. It did get out that he was there, but this is the head coach. And he didn't have any special affiliation with Alan. He just went there and talked some football with a guy who needed a friendly face. And I told him I'd never forget him for that. But you're not judged on being a good guy in this profession of coaching. You gotta win and have success. Other coaches who are some good guys too, but are on the hot seat. Let's talk about, first of all, Jim Caldwell in Indianapolis.
Well, they're still just even talking to some people back in Indy yesterday. He actually has a chance to keep his job, believe it or not. But I think what he needs to do is he needs to win 3 of the next 5 games to be able to do it, because you already see that there's going to be coaching staff changes. Larry Coryer was fired yesterday as a defensive coordinator. But I think they would like, because the one thing is, I mean, what they look at is that the season was blown out once they lost Peyton Manning, not because they have Jim Caldwell as coach, but also he needs to at least win a couple games to get things going so he can save his job. So I still think there's a chance that he can save his job. 1-15, 0-16, there's no way. So they like him. They're still playing hard for him. They're just not doing anything on offense that can win football games.
John Clayton of ESPN joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. More hot seats, Philadelphia. John, do you think Andy Reid can survive there?
I do, because when you think about it, okay, if they were on a franchise one-year contract with Michael Vick, then he might not. But they put $100 million into Michael Vick, and there is no coaching staff in this country that would do a better job with Michael Vick than both Andy Reid and Marty Morningwig. And if you take the two away from him, then you've just wasted $100 million, because, you know, what those two guys did is make Michael Vick turned his career around. He was an elite running quarterback when he was with Atlanta, taking the team into the playoffs. Now he's an elite throwing and running quarterback. And so if you take away the two coaches that got him to earn that $100 million, you've now set the franchise back, and they're not interested in setting the franchise back. Plus, there's a loyalty factor. Jeff Lurie, for many, many years, has said, Andy, you can coach this team as long as you want. And so unless Andy decides to step down, I don't think he's being fired.
And Tom Coughlin with the Giants in their usual late season second half of season struggle, can he survive it this time?
I think he can, but it's going to be dicey because, there's a great option out there in Jeff Fisher. And you know that John Mara was on the competition committee with him. You know John Mara would love to be able to stay with Tom Coughlin as a coach. But you have to be concerned about these second half falls. And, a lot of it still has to do with some of the talent that's there. I mean, that offensive line, they let personnel get way too old. You can see that Brandon Jacobs is not running the football as well. They've got holes in their linebacking corps, but they've had that for many years. And so, the reason that they are in this position is that they should never have lost that Seattle home game. and they should have never lost that Philadelphia home game. Those are the two games that I think are going to have to make the judgment. Is it Coughlin's fault? Is it injuries or whatever it is? I still think he can survive, but it's making it tougher.
And with all these situations, John, and I know this is something we've talked about before, but assistant coaches can sort of a – I don't say, is there a dearth of candidates among assistant coaches just because the head coaches have taken on so much in the way of play calling?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you talk about the way to develop potential head coaches, the NFL has found to do it. Because if you really look at the numbers, there are 10, count them, 10 offensive coaches that are calling their plays. There are 5 defensive coaches that are calling their plays. Then you start to look, okay, what do you have? You have 8 former head coaches that may not get a second bite, third bite, or fourth bite at the apple as a head coach. So that takes 18 offensive coaches off the board. So you have 14 coordinators on offense, and literally you have about 18 on defense. That's 32 assistant coaches that are in that category. So now what do? Do you reach for guys like Joe Philbin in Green Bay, who's not called a play in his life? Do you reach for a Pete Carmichaels, who's filled in for 2 weeks calling plays while Sean Payton was recovering from his knee injury? Those are the options that you have. And so I don't think, and again, I guess because we're old, we actually go back when they didn't even have coordinators for the most part. But it's like, we're at a stage right now, if coordinator is the ticket to become a head coach, it's as low as it can get.
I'm to the point in looking at the Ndamukong Suh story in Detroit, John, where it's sort of sad, maybe even a little pathetic. I look at a guy who has enormous talent. I look at a guy who just seemingly as a rookie had the world in his hands, and by the way, he still does, but seemed to have a better grip on it a year ago, and seems to be unnecessarily adding to it with stuff that is so far beyond what you need to be as a player, where you're now trying to intentionally hurt someone else outside the boundaries of play, hurting your football team, and developing, I think, a kind of reputation that is going to be very hard to live down. And doing that on Thanksgiving Day of all days, where every football, even casual football eyeballs are on you, where does it leave this situation, and now with him facing the 2-game suspension?
Well, two things need to happen. First off, Jim Schwartz needs to take more control of it. I mean, he cannot just enable him and to allow what he's been doing. I mean, he needs to be more forceful. But I think the second thing that needs to be done is I think Ndamukong Suh needs to reach out to Mean Joe Green, because if you really go back to 1969, Green's first year, Green was doing the same type of things. I mean, he was slamming people around. I remember he chased Danny Abramowitz around the Superdome trying to beat him up one time.
I remember that.
I remember that. I mean,
yes.
It's like that first year, I mean, he was Mean Joe Green. I mean, he came in with the name, but, man, he was mean. Chuck Knoll said, this has got to stop. You've got to focus. And he, all of a sudden, within 1 year, turned it around, and he was one of the nicest guys doing Coke commercials and becoming the Hall of Famer that he was and one of the greatest defensive tackles in the game. What Ndamukong needs to do, because he has that type of talent, is to call Mean Joe. And have Mean Joe talk him through. Mean Joe is coaching defensive linemen. He will tell him, it's like, you cannot do this. They've been in the same boat. They're in the same talent level. But I think that if Ndamukong doesn't do it, then he's in denial and it's going to let his career be very average.
And if he does it, he could add a soft drink commercial in addition to the car commercials he's doing. So it's all good. All right.
Absolutely.
John, great stuff. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We'll talk with you down the road.
Okay, thanks.
He is John Clayton from ESPN. And much more is coming up on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford and brought to you by Madden NFL 12 in stores now. EA Sports, it's in the game.